The Sunstone Foundation presents Crisis in Home Teaching. Why doesn't it get done? Recorded live at the 1989 Sunstone Symposium, held August 23rd through 26th in Salt Lake City, Utah. We take you now to the University of Utah campus, where the program is about to begin.
Going on the problem of home teaching and why it doesn't get done. We would ask you, for the purpose of this recording, to please come up and address your questions into the microphone itself. Now, home teaching as a program has been a part of Mormonism since the very beginning. But in spite of the antiquity of the home teaching program, it has been one of the biggest headaches for the priesthood. Most quorums throughout the church continually wrestle with low home teaching statistics every month. The discussion of this problem seldom transcends the time limitations that are set up in priesthood quorum meetings, the catechism that is given between the quorum instructor and the quorum itself, or the pedantic pronouncements of church leaders. Now, the purpose of this panel discussion, therefore, is to provide a forum where we can have some sort of open discussion about the nature of the home teaching program itself. Each panelist, as I said, has been invited to offer their own reflections on the causes of this problem, if we can put it in those terms. And so the four central questions that I've asked each panelist to contemplate are these. Why do many priesthood bearers throughout the church find it hard to complete their home teaching assignments? When it is completed, why do priesthood bearers do it reluctantly? Does the responsibility for this problem rest with the priesthood bearers themselves? Is it the program, or is it something else? And finally, what remedies may be suggested? Now, I guess we'll go ahead and I'll offer some of my observations as on the home teaching program itself. This whole problem of home teaching is something I've wrestled with since I was 14 years old. I'll never forget my initial excitement as a teacher going out with one of the older members of the ward to visit several widows of the ward. And we would sit there for about an hour chatting about the good old days. He would then give the typical admonition to live according to the gospel. We would shake hands, leave a prayer, and go home. And I would wonder, what was the purpose? What was accomplished by all of this? I didn't feel like I was actually doing anything as a teacher, just sitting there. And occasionally they would turn to me and say, what do you think, Eduardo, on tithing or something like that? When I became a companion, when I became an elder, came home from my mission, and I was assigned home teaching assignments, again the question plagued me, what is the purpose of home teaching? What am I doing? What am I truly accomplishing? Is a visit enough? A half-hour visit with a family, is that enough? The home teaching program has the potential, like almost all programs in the church, to truly bring about a marvelous work and a wonder among the saints. Instead, the reality of home teaching is that it breeds, in my opinion, insincerity and hypocrisy. The ultimate goal of the home teaching program, at least according to the typical stories that are circulated about great home teachers, is to become an uncle to the children, a friend to the parents, and a handyman to the house. This is fine and dandy for Norman Rockwell existence. But in the real world, would the home teacher have naturally done those kinds of things had he not been first assigned to that family? Such selective behavior seems to be in violation of the spirit of the Beatitudes, particularly when a home teacher's attention to a certain family stops when his assignment ends. Yet if a home teacher is to remain consistent in his behavior by continuing to show the same level of attention and concern for a given family after his calling has ended, or his assignment has ended to that family, after a while it's conceivable that that home teacher would have to give up working for a living just to attend to the needs of the families he has accumulated over the years. Contrary to the faith-promoting stories of the great home teachers, the elder who was working like a slave to support his own family during the week, does not often have the time to remember the special moments in little Janie's life, or to teach little Bobby how to throw a curve for the big Little League game this Saturday, or to spend his weekends fixing the rain gutter when he should be fixing his own rain gutter. What home teaching amounts to, therefore, is an assigned friendship which is constrained by the practicalities of modern living. A friendship which often begins and ends on the whim of the elder's quorum presidency. Further confining the efficacy of the home teacher is the nature of social relations in America. During his typically brief tenure with a given family, the elder, the home teacher, is expected to develop the kind of rapport and confidence that is necessary so that the family will feel comfortable in calling upon him in times of need. The problem with this is that most men wouldn't turn to their chosen friends for help, much less an assigned friend, one who is there out of duty. To do so would be admitting failure, that the elder, the man of the house, is unable to manage his household, with the implication that some moral failure is ultimately behind his request for help. After all, wouldn't God bless the faithful? Thus, the problem also lies in the kind of help the home teacher is supposed to offer. Who wants to admit to a virtual stranger that all is not well in the home, that one's marriage could be better, more time and better time could be spent with the kids, that one is not living the gospel wholly and completely? Furthermore, the home teacher is largely without experience or qualification to handle any matters of serious concern, and is reduced in practicality to being little more than a messenger boy for the bishop. Aside from the infringement that reporting on a family's spiritual and temporal health has on the right to privacy, if something is wrong with the family, the head of the house is usually more inclined to go directly to the bishop without wanting to involve more people than what is necessary. Why use a middleman when the bishop is just a phone call away? That's why the only help home teachers usually get asked to do is moving the family out of the ward. It's a safe, non-committal form of assistance that can be performed without revealing what should remain within the walls of the home to begin with. If this is an inaccurate or exaggerated picture of what is expected of home teachers, then what is the program in reality reduced to? A couple of elders who, to begin with, would not normally have much contact with the family they've been assigned to, drop by once a month to teach a lesson. All right, in theory, this sounds very nice. Members helping each other, visiting each other to buoy up the downcast and spread the good news of Christ. But what is actually accomplished by all of this? Is it necessary, if a family is regularly attending church, to have someone come into their home to regurgitate the same stuff they hear in Sunday school, priesthood, and sacrament? What really takes place in a home teaching visit is that the home teacher, after the customary 5 to 10 minutes of idle chatter and some token attempts to get the baby to smile, launches into a 10-minute summary of the home teaching article found in the Ensign. Now I have to stop here and add a footnote. I'm from Arizona, and we call it the Ensign down south, not the Ensign. All right. This summary is often then followed by the customary challenge to live according to the gospel, a closing prayer, and a firm handshake. Then, once every quarter, he reports to his home teaching supervisor on the spiritual and temporal condition of the family he visits. Never mind that he may only spend a half hour a month with the family and maybe 5 minutes thinking about them before he knocks on the door. Never mind that the kids can't wait until the home teachers leave so they can return to their normal activities, and that the parents put up a nice front so that the word won't get back to the bishop that there are a bunch of heathens in that family. For home teaching to truly work, it seems to me, requires a Herculean effort from everyone involved. Everyone must be better than what they already are, to live beyond the standards of their everyday world, to live as if they would not normally live, as they would not normally live. To admit that one has problems and needs emotional, spiritual, or economic help requires a great deal of humility, something that is not in great abundance in a society that glorifies the rugged individual. For the home teacher to magnify his calling, he must lose his selfish concerns and work to bolster his ailing brother or sister, a feat that is not easily accomplished within an economic system that daily teaches the glories of greed and the depravity of those not strong enough to compete in the race. But even if we lived in a more communal society, the cost of losing oneself in the service to others is potentially great, one's own family. When the elder should be home instructing his own family how to better live the gospel, a task that requires a diligent effort that never truly ends, he is supposed to be out helping his brother to straighten his house. No wonder that home teaching is performed with a minimal amount of effort. Again, the question must be asked, what is accomplished by all of this? Not much, really. What you have is a group of people who go through the motions of a program that in theory is supposed to be a means of providing a network of support, ensuring activity, and keeping tabs on one another, but in reality amounts to little more than a hollow effort, a meaningless ritual. Yet the program is not without its strengths. Once in a great while, the program works. The home teacher is turned to when all else fails, and if the ailing brother or sister is lucky, the home teacher is able and qualified to do them some good. These examples of home teaching success, which are unfortunately few and far between, are what keep the program limping along. Now, as far as any suggestions for the program itself, one of the difficulties in wrestling with the program of home teaching is that it is actually part of the church government. You look in Doctrine and Covenants, Section 20, and it is fundamental as bishops, stake presidents, elders. The home teaching program really is the basis of what I believe Mormonism is all about, a means in which we can exercise charity for our brothers and sisters. Again, coming back to the question, why isn't it done? Why is it done reluctantly? I can only speak from my own personal experience. I truly don't know what it means to be a home teacher. Some of the reasons I've already elaborated. But, you know, there was a point. Let me give you an example. There was, in one ward, I was singled out as being an exemplary home teacher in front of the entire priesthood. And that was embarrassing, I have to admit. But the reason why the bishop singled me out was that a sister that I was home teaching miscarried. And she was very distraught over that and asked for a blessing. I gave her a blessing. And when I got home, I immediately called the Relief Society president to notify her that this sister is in distress. And I called the Elders Quorum president to let my leaders know that this individual needs some help. I felt like a rat. I felt like a stool pigeon who was tattling on someone I was assigned to watch over. I felt that I was divulging some information that probably should have stayed within the walls of her house, but at the same time, I felt obligated by my responsibility of a home teacher to report to my superiors what is happening to that family. Now, the only suggestion that I can offer is a very selfish one, something that I've come up myself to handle my own problems, my own inadequacies as a home teacher, and I don't think it's very practical for the church at large, but this is what I've done. First of all, I've gone, my experience in serving in an Elders Quorum presidency, the way home teaching assignments have been made, according to my experience, is much like praying before throwing a deck of cards on the floor. You pray that they would land where they're supposed to land, rather than praying where each individual piece should go. So as it usually turned out, my experience is that when a home teaching assignment was filled, it was simply, who has a spot? Who is not teaching five families already? Let's go ahead and give them this family. Little or no concern was made about the needs of that individual family. Can this given elder meet those needs? And so what I have done is that I've fallen into the habit of demanding, going to my Elders Quorum president saying, if you want 100% home teaching, this is what I need. This is the kind of elder I want to home teach with. These are the kind of families that I need to teach because I think I can be the most effective. Secondly, one other thing that we've tried, and Fred has been involved in this little experiment. Both Fred and I were in the same student housing in Tucson. We got together home teaching groups, little families. We happened to be assigned to each other pretty much to home teach each other. So once a month, we got together as a group. We had a prayer. We had a lesson. We had refreshments. We sat around and chatted. We had our assignment done. Everyone went home having a good experience. I realize that there are some very serious flaws to that program. Other wards I'm aware of have tried that, and it leads very quickly to elitism and cliquishness within the ward. So those are the only suggestions I can come up with. This is a very difficult problem, and this is one of the reasons why I've asked Mark, Paul, and Fred, three men whom I admire, to come and give us their impressions of the program, their suggestions of what can be done. So, with that, I'll go ahead and turn the time over to Fred, then we'll follow with Mark, and finally Paul will be our last. And afterwards, we would truly like to open up for discussion any insights that you might offer, questions you might have. The only thing we request is that you come up here and speak into the microphone since this is being recorded. All right, Fred.
I believe in the validity and value of home teaching, but at the same time, I think that it is frequently not done. I know it's frequently not done. and it's frequently ineffective. And I believe that the principal problem is that it is poorly managed, and that the blame can be focused directly on ineffective and uninspired leadership at the ward level. My experience has been in elders' quorums, and so that's largely the focus of what I'm going to talk about here. I have a series of items here that I want to talk about. First of all, I think that we can talk about unrealistic expectations, both of the program and of the home teachers. The anecdotes used to promote the program typically depict Brother Super Home Teacher visiting and helping an inactive family for 10 years without the slightest encouragement until finally some miracle takes place, perhaps a blessing or something of that sort, and the family comes to appreciate him, and they return to activity in the church. Another ideal that is offered is the home teacher who remembers everyone's birthday, who can fix anything, and is able to come over at any time of the day or night to perform any kind of task necessary. Cases of this type do more harm than good, since few home teachers have the time, energy, or talent to be these kinds of home teachers. There are, however, large numbers of men who have a sincere desire to do their duty and who render whatever benevolent service they can in a ward. Unrealistic and meaningless goals are demoralizing and counterproductive. It would be better to emphasize the steady and regular devotion to duty rather than these acts of the super home teacher. A successful home teaching program, furthermore, should not be defined as one in which a 100% goal is reached every month. I don't believe in the 100% goal, but rather a more a better goal would be to make sure that the home teachers visit every home which desires to have home teachers. Not everyone wants those home teachers, but every home in which the members of the church desire the presence of the home teacher every month should have home teachers, and that would be an admirable goal. Furthermore, it would be one in which problems which can appropriately be handled by home teachers are being addressed. Some people see the home teachers as spies for the bishop. And I think that their desire to not have those home teachers darken the doors should be respected. And I also think that the new program is accommodating the wishes and desires of those people. Similarly, the concept of what constitutes a problem or need should be overhauled. Ed mentioned the concept of needs here a moment ago. For example, what I personally need from a home teacher is for that home teacher to come every month. I like the visits. I like the contact. But I also need to have a spirited exchange with my home teachers on ward politics and on the gospel principles which are outlined in the lesson, which I don't care whether he gets that out of the ensign or makes it up. But I would like to have a spirited discussion of those things. In fact, my home teacher came a few weeks ago, and he's a good guy, but he brought a new companion with him who he initiated by having him give the lesson. And when my wife and I finished with that poor boy, he looked like he had fallen among thieves. But I think that there are people like me who need that. That's my need. There are other people, the little old ladies, who need to have someone come and see them every month just to help them to feel that they are needed and wanted, and that the people in the ward recognize that they're still alive and that they're still with the human race. When I was young, I spent a good deal of time making visits of this type with my elders' quorum president father. Furthermore, proper identification of spiritual as well as temporal needs is essential to successful home teaching, and home teachers need to be trained to recognize these needs. A need is not, as you can see, is not necessarily a problem. And If a home teacher tells me month after month in PPI meetings that the families he's visiting have no needs and no problems, I worry. That home teacher needs to listen and observe more carefully. Sometimes, of course, home teachers exaggerate or imagine problems where none exist. But more typically, you will get a report back that everything is fine when the roof is falling in. So it's a point that needs careful attention. Proper use of goals and records, I have already mentioned. We should discard the useless notion of 100% home teaching. I would say a more realistic standard would be between 75 and 85%. But can we expect much more when sacrament meeting attendance is at 60 and 65% in a good ward? Because wards usually have a steady stream of people moving in and out, and some wards have more of this movement than others. For example, in a student ward or in a working class ward, you know, you can have a turnover of 25 or 50 people in a month's time. And it is difficult for most ward leaders to tell exactly how many members they have in the ward at any given moment. When I was an elders quorum president, my executive secretary had the best ward list, at least for the people that we had responsibility for in the whole ward. We also had to call specific people, which I called finders, to hunt people down and find out where they live, to find out if they were, if they were truly members of the church. In student wards, students, when they sign up for college classes, check religious preference, and sometimes, they check LDS, just to get the registrar off their back. And so we get people who are not really members in these student ward lists. But also, again, in these student and working class wards, sometimes people who are in these wards use the opportunity of moving to hide from the church, hide from God. Also, goals should be for the exclusive use and reference of leaders rather than as an instrument of weekly flagellation in quorum meetings. Now, I'm not to say that it's a state secret. If anybody asked me what the statistics on home teaching were, I'd gladly show them. But what's the purpose, of having a chart going up and down like this, usually down, and say, gee, brethren, we got to do better here. And every week we say that. It gets to be like the Jeremiads that you see in the Book of Mormon and among the early Puritans in America. They got bored with being told to repent or they were going to die. They just soon die rather than have the, hear the speech again. Let me give you an example of the things that record should show. The record should help us identify those men who are self-motivated in their home teaching as opposed to those who need considerable motivating. And this question of motivating is also important. Those brethren who need motivating and encouragement. You're crazy, as an elders quorum president, to put two unmotivated men together as home teachers. But I see this, you were mentioning that too. You see this happening over and over again. They pull the names out of a hat. They assign families according to who doesn't have five people. So also, if the record shows that someone has not been visited for 1, 2, 3, or more months, and the record should show that, then clearly there's a problem in the home teaching. And so the PPI should be used to sit down and find out why the visit hasn't taken place. Is there friction between the home teacher and the family? And this happens. I was assigned to a companion. We went into the home of an unmarried graduate student, which is, nothing unusual. And his first question is, why aren't you married? He was in vet school. We went over to to another home, and we were sitting there in our visit, and he was playing with the dog, and we talked for a few minutes, and then he was kind of feeling the dog's belly, and he says, your dog here has cancer and is going to die. I asked for a new companion, and if those people didn't ask for a new companion too, there's something wrong. No wonder people don't want the home teachers to come. Is the home teacher himself experiencing problems which are preventing him, from doing his duty? Is the home teacher inadequate to the task of handling the problems of the families to whom he has been assigned? Some people go into a home and they see all these problems, and there is absolutely nothing they can do but wring their hands in despair, whereas another home teacher can go into that home and say, you know, and immediately see things that they can talk about and work on, you know. But again, these are problems. These are, you know, things in assignments which reduce the incidence and effectiveness of home teaching. Proper use of the PPI, I've mentioned already, and I am dismayed to see the reduction in the required number of encounters that the home teachers need to have with their priesthood leadership. Handling the crisis in leadership, I think, is essential. I gave a speech on this a few weeks ago, but because I think that leadership is an ongoing and continuing crisis in the LDS Church, because we have a lay clergy, and it always has been, and it always will. And the problem, of course, is training our leaders more effectively. But we get too many speeches about home teaching and not enough effective management of the program. The end result is that many priesthood holders and leaders soon get discouraged. To them, it seems like an endless task without purpose or meaning. Anything that needs to be said about that needs to be said should be done on an individual basis in the PPI. It's like, to me, talking about home teaching from the pulpit is as bad as talking about ward finances from the pulpit. If you want money in the ward, you don't stand up and say, "Hey, everybody, pay your budget." You go to the people in the ward who have money, and you say, "We've got this coming up. You know, we need money. Can you give some?" You don't talk about money from the pulpit. Home teaching is a calling, and it should be made as such. Nothing will kill a home teaching program faster than haphazard and uninspired assignments. And when I have the courage of my convictions, I'm going to stand up in a priesthood meeting and say, "I'm not taking this assignment for home teaching until you go back and read your manual and find out how this is supposed to be done. You call me in and give me a calling like you're supposed to." And I think that that's what we need to do. Finally, I think that that a great deal of responsibility for the home teaching getting done needs to rest with the families themselves. That is to say, if your home teacher is not coming, you need to call that home teacher and say, "Hey, I want you to come. You know, can you come Sunday night at 6 o'clock? Fine. And I'm not suggesting that we need to have public humiliation from the pulpit like we saw here with Ed Pagan several months ago. Actually, he didn't even know that he was the ladies' home teacher. But when he was publicly chastised for not coming. But I think that there does need to be some individual contact from the families. If you want a home teacher, call those home teachers. Call your elders' quorum president. Find out who it is. You know, and if that person won't come, then tell the elders' quorum president that you want a new or a different home teacher. We got an excellent home teacher who is now a branch president in Nigeria, who happened to be a black man, who became our home teacher because other families in the ward didn't want him. You know, I mean, we just heard a speech on continuing tacit racism in the church from Eugene England here. But that is the point that I want to make. And I think that we need to have better ways of thinking and talking about home teaching if we want to make this program as effective and as powerful as the scriptures tell us it can be. Thank you.
I'm coming to speak with you here today not as a lieutenant or even a general in the home teaching program, for I have never served in any elders' quorum presidency, but rather as a first or second class private who has been slugging it out in the trenches. Home teaching is a monthly and ongoing rite of passage for Mormon males, urged along by perennial, if not monthly, injunctions from pulpit and pew to get the job done, not to love with Christ. Mormon men face the recurring task with too little enthusiasm. Even the monthly personal priesthood interviews, ostensibly aimed at inquiring after the welfare of church members, seem curiously sterile, at least in my ward, devoid of the goal of serving God by serving others. Too often, those meetings, like most Mormon efforts, are burdened by bureaucratic goals where marking roles and meeting quotas push ahead of the welfare of individuals. In order to analyze the malaise, I looked over my own attitude when accosted by at church, always, but always, just 2 days before the end of the month, by those poor unfortunates who are assigned to my home. When greeted by an effort to set up an appointment, a crop of excuses usually emerged from me, all offered in a very carefully rehearsed litany. A visit to my parents is pending on every night of the forthcoming week, or I have a trial approaching and I'm facing Fred Voros, or my children have acquired malaria and my house has been quarantined, or the best one, I'm preparing for the next Sunstone Symposium. That last one is guaranteed to secure a six-month hiatus from being asked again. Of course, I usually give in, and two freshly scrubbed teachers appear at my door, openly friendly, but with an occasional darkness of the eye which betrays their attitude. Of course, over the years, I've had great home teachers, and then I've had the rest. I've also been a good home teacher and not so good one. The best teachers, really visitors inquiring after the welfare of my family, but mostly the spiritual welfare, have been welcomed, sought out, and desired. Informed, intelligent discussions ensue where the spirit of inquiry and God's love and peace hung like a patina in the air. When they left, my family and I felt exhausted and yet renewed. These men are still our dear friends, companions to all in my family. It was hard for me to overestimate their importance. The rest of the home teachers, decent men to the end, acted, I have thought, out of a sense of duty. Curious about the oddness of my home, and I assure you it's strange, they came to discover, to probe, to fulfill their priesthood duties. But instead of religiously insightful questions and observations, it seemed that we were being examined, our conformity to mainline Mormonism determined and analyzed and reported. Only questions about my work, our children's new bike, my wife's latest compassionate service effort, or my reaction to the latest ensign, but not Sunstone, are heard. The responses are duly measured, noted, and given to the bishop to assure our normalcy. All good topics, to be sure, but not evidence of the teacher's sensitivity to the needs of my family. To be sure, I may not be fair about all of this. After all, it is a special and individual conceit to believe that home teaching is only for the family visited. Hopefully, all parties to the effort benefit from that interchange. But as the Doctrine and Covenants instructs us, a slothful effort is not worth doing, for it imperils the soul of the actor. There is a deeply rooted truth in that observation. Much is lost where duty, alone or principally, motivates the action. Such sloth does not generate the kind of people that God can rely upon, for not the objective of love, but conformity, secured the proper action. Rather, a genuine desire to inquire after the welfare of people or others ought to characterize the home teaching effort. Otherwise, both teacher and family visited suffer from a cynical conformity and religious endurance which cuts the heart out of choice and charity. There is another need, too, and that is sensitivity. It does not do, for instance, for home teachers to prattle on about the need for economic and other personal self-reliance in a home where one or both parents are disabled, in constant need of the healing balm of church welfare to meet even the most rudimentary of human needs. Similarly, home teachers should not quote, as they often do in the home of the curious, from dated speeches of some BYU professors who, oddly for their jobs, caution their audience about relying upon human reason. At a minimum, the teachers ought to gauge their efforts to match their audience. But what leads to this boredom and insensitivity? I think there may be several reasons. The first might be that with the increasing bureaucratization of everyday Mormon life, the link between the identification of temporal or spiritual trouble and their remedy is unclear and indistinct. Perhaps because home teachers are drawn from the ranks of all people, from the honest laborer to the lowly attorney whose livelihood is derived from the role as a word merchant, most home teachers are probably ill-prepared by inclination or training to be of direct assistance to the suffering saint or Gentile. It is well known that home teachers are relatively discouraged from direct action and assistance and are instead directed to notify the Elders Quorum Presidency of whatever the need might be. Consequently, it is too often true that the link is broken between those in need and those who hopefully first observe the crisis. Similarly, most spiritual crises are dealt with on the bishopric level. Though the home teacher may sense some spiritual trouble, the final resolution, in fact, of course, all significant decisions, are addressed on an administrative level higher than that of the home teacher. Though through church correlation, individual authority and inspiration may have been sacrificed for the sake of bureaucratic goals and objectives. The presently established system of home teaching and the welfare system alienate the remedy from the first sight of it. Consequently, there is too little energy or Christian charity expended by those who battle in the front trenches of human misery. The church needs to re-examine the system to permit the home teacher to see the problem through to resolution, perhaps with the assistance of others as necessary. Otherwise, a cynical detachment characterizes the home teacher's efforts and intent. The second reason may be that one of the putative goals of the home teaching system is the identification and alleviation of temporal and spiritual suffering and deprivation. In a less affluent age, the moral content of home teaching would be more apparent. Though not all of the church suffers under the relative affluence of the Wasatch Front, it is here, I suspect, that the greatest boredom exists. It is hard to imagine, for instance, that a Salvadoran home teacher would view his or her job with the same disdain or avoidance that characterizes local efforts. It is also unlikely that so many Mormon homes would barely tolerate the attitudes of most home teachers if there were a genuine need for the assistance and home teaching which the home teaching system might offer. While no sensible person would wish for economic deprivation or spiritual crisis to re-energize the home teaching program, it remains true that programs of temporal and spiritual assistance find their most fertile grounds in the fields of adversity and deprivation. The Book of Mormon repeatedly, but sadly, teaches that the greatest human care and mutual love exists under conditions of deprivation and oppression, where affluence does not distract one from the task of caring for another. As a sidebar to this, it occurs to me that in the first years of the church in Utah, as my grandfather told me before his death, that most Mormon cultures were more homogeneous. There were more commonly shared experiences, and the local wards were smaller and more evenly measured. Against those circumstances, it would be easier for a person to relate to another. As it is, people of quite diverse backgrounds are forced together, which is a good goal, but it is often an incomplete one. Now, at the risk of reigniting an argument that went on in this room last night between several of us until almost 7 p.m., I must say this last thing. Home teaching, with apologies to Paul and to Fred and others of you who suffered, home teaching is in practice an administrative habit that is enervated in part by prevailing Mormon attitudes and religious beliefs. Specifically, this is an old hobby horse of mine, emergent Mormon notions about the fallen nature of the human soul have many effects, one of which may be the derivative injury to the anxiousness that suffused 19th century Mormonism. Beliefs strongly influence, when they don't determine, action. To the extent that any person holds the view that their actions are genuinely important only to the extent that they are rescued from moral oblivion or insufficiency by grace, a person is less likely, but not necessarily, but less likely to interpret their activities, which cannot be genuinely characterized as moral, as being intrinsically important. While this reason, such as it is, Fred, for the teaching boredom is as elusive as it is difficult to remedy, it remains true that any belief which separates the ethical quality of an action from an independent and indispensable moral quotient of the actor is almost certainly responsible in part for an enervated home teaching system. There are other reasons, perhaps, and maybe ones that I have, and maybe some of the ones that I've recited to explain the boredom are off the mark. However, it seems apparent that there is a profound spiritual crisis in the home teaching effort. In a program which draws its inspiration from the first years of the Relief Society, when Emma Smith and others went forth to rescue hypothermic babies from the frozen rivers and grounds, then to warm them back, then to warm life back into those abandoned or lost infants. It is tragic that so little is accomplished these days. Most Mormon home teachers, whether male or female, as my wife informs me, do not meet the moral obligation founded in the LDS ethic that much should be expected when so much is given. Unless there is a value-laden reversal of the present circumstances, Mormonism will have lost a portion of its claim to kindness and compassion and the gentle love of Christ. Thank you.
For those of you who were here yesterday and heard our big debate about Neo-Orthodox with Mark is a person that I very much like, and even though we don't agree on many things, he's one of the people that I feel would continue to talk to me after everybody stopped talking to me. It's traditional in the church to blame the failure of the home teaching program on the home teachers. For over 20 years, I know this because I've been counting, home teaching has been touted as the backbone or heart of the correlation program of the church, the delivery system of all of the church's other correlated programs. Home teaching is a revelation, we are told, so it can't fail. If it hasn't yet caught on in the church, the blame rests with us, our laziness, lack of enthusiasm and charity, and our worldliness and lack of obedience to counsel keep home teaching from operating as it should. Now it's also suggested by Mark Gustafson that home teaching isn't working because of the influence of the members of the influence on the members of the church of the teachings of a new school of thought, Neo-Orthodoxy.
That was my last reason, Paul.
I put it first. But according to Mark, the reason why priesthood holders don't do their home teaching is because so many of them now believe they are saved by grace. They are no longer interested in doing good works. I wish it were true, Mark. Let me say first that it's not untypical for the members to be blamed for the failures of a church program. Since we believe that every program in the church is God-ordained, prophet-approved, any failures seem to be thought of as the failures of the rank and file. But home teaching, as we have it in the church today, is not really in the Revelations. I mean, in the Revelations we read in section 2046, the priest's duty is to preach, teach, expound, exhort, and baptize, and administer the sacrament, and visit the home of each member and exhort them to pray vocally and in secret and attend to all family duties. Now, this has traditionally been the verse that's been used by the leaders of the church as the source of the home teaching program. I remember very well the film strip or the film of Marion G. Romney being interviewed, I think, by Neil Maxwell and Marion Romney saying that this is the source of the home teaching program. I believe that the expectation that we as members should care for one another in some systematic way is a divine expectation. I believe in this. Does that mean, though, that the mechanism by which we do this is fixed in concrete? Can the home teaching program not be critically evaluated and restructured to function better? Well, my feeling is yes. First, because I don't believe that the mechanism for home teaching is actually fixed in concrete. Just the injunction that we go, like Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel, priests or whoever, preach, touch one another spiritually. And also because the Aaronic priesthood was restructured in the early part of the century to be a kind of preparatory priesthood for boys. And then the home teaching responsibility was then placed on the elders and the 70s and the high priests and their various quorums through the correlation program. Because this is so, I think we can feel free to monitor this program like all other church programs to see if it is indeed meeting the needs of saints. And if it's not, then we should consider ways to restructure the program so that it does work. I've thought about the home teaching program and my experiences with it for a quarter of a century. I love saying that now. I don't know why. It's because everybody thinks I'm an adolescent, I guess. Complaining about their parents. Anyway, a quarter of a century ago, I was an adult in the church functioning as a home teacher. And I realized that I have had good experiences with home teaching, and then I've had not so good experiences. My good experiences came between 1969 and 1973, the 5-year period following my mission. During this time, I was a member of the BYU 12th Ward, the BYU 10th Stake. Ivan J. Barrett was the stake president, and Hiram L. Andrus and Walter Bowen were his counselors. Bill Nelson, who is now the secretary to the Quorum of the Twelve, was a high counselor and one of the shakers and movers in the stake. Robert Parsons was the executive secretary. These men had a very strong feeling about home teaching and how it should be done. Every young man in the BYU ward I was in was to be a home teacher. The older male students, or the more zealous younger ones, were called to priesthood leadership positions, and you had to get to 6 o'clock in the morning meetings to get these positions. If you didn't show up for these, you weren't worthy to hold one. Positions that in their home wards were usually held by adults. So it was exhilarating to be called to these positions, to be considered by older and obviously spiritual men to be worthy and able to carry out church duties that in other places were delegated to fully mature men with families. The home teaching itself was very well defined. A family was every single individual. Or if they were married students, then the married individuals were a family, and their children, of course, if they had any. Home teachers were assigned by the Elders Quorum president, who was also in charge of the prospective elder program. There were no 70s or high priest groups or quorums in the BYU singles wards in those days, and I don't think they are now. The home teachers were to pray with their assigned families, testify to them, bring them gospel messages, inspire them, and bring to bear upon them, when needed, the welfare, genealogical, and missionary and other resources of the church. It was a very exciting time. There was a lot of the Spirit of God. It felt genuine, and I believe it was genuine. The Spirit was real, even if our experiences of life were not very broad, and even if we were slightly narcissistic about our own spiritual abilities and the potential of our interpretation of the correlation program to literally bring about Zion. Later, between 1973 and 1978, the program in the 10th stake at BYU changed and became less intense. The original stake presidency was released early, it seemed. The rumor was that too much zeal had irritated and possibly frightened the brethren. After all, in the 10th stake, home teaching was being done once a week. With unbelievably high statistics. In the 90th percentile. Now, I'm telling you the truth because I was an elders president in this program. It was the last calling I've ever had. Of key-holding responsibility. This is true. We were getting nearly 100% home teaching visits per week. I know this because I personally visited every member of my quorum once or twice a month. So I knew they were getting home taught at least once a month or twice a month. And I kept very close tabs on the visits that were made by quorum members. It was exhausting but extremely rewarding. And most other elders and prospective elders found this to be true as well, although I learned later that there was also a certain percentage of elders who felt put upon by the demands of these programs, as may be perfectly understandable, I see now. I mean, there was such another program called Life that was going on. And the new stake presidency that replaced the original one was Don Wright, the microbiologist at BYU, Wilson K. Anderson, the religionist and motorcyclist, and Jerry Rose, who I believe then was teaching in the religion department. These men carried on the tradition of the former stake presidency, but in a more relaxed way. The requirement for home teachings were much less demanding. Home teaching was to be done only once a month with a follow-up visit. So as not to interfere too much in the education process. After all, BYU was a university. We forgot about that. And students were there to learn. We were reminded by no less a personage than Elder Packer. Not to do home teaching all the time. Also, BYU student family groups organized by wards to conduct weekly home evenings were to restrict their weekday activities to 1 hour on Monday evenings. Though less intense, it was still a very zealous program. In 1978, I married and soon after came under the intense and ruthless scrutiny of a certain stake president who, for reasons that are still unclear to me, thought of me as quite dangerous, and I must say that probably I am now, but then I wasn't. Perhaps he was prophetic. But then again, maybe that's because of what he did. That's why I've become the way I am, so I don't know. Anyway, as a result of his influence, I've not been called to a significant church calling without the special intercession of a friend or in church leadership since then. For other reasons that I will not get into here, I do not now home teach and haven't for a number of years, although I am a full-fledged member in shaky but good standing. Upon leaving BYU, I experienced the sharp and stunning transition from the zeal of the student wards to the lack of zeal of the regular wards of the church. It's comparable to getting the bends, I think. Where home teaching is, in these regular wards, home teaching suffers along and is done often without enthusiasm, with poor statistics, but with some notable successes that we hear about, but a lot more lack of success that we kind of know but don't talk about. I tell you all this because I think it will help you to understand my limited background as I make my comments about the problems I see with home teaching. But before I do, I want to say right away that I am no longer, and have not been for a long time, a proponent of the kind of zeal that existed among us in the 10th stake in the early 1970s. Although the spirit there was real, the narcissism, the sense of self-importance, the insensitivity to the contradictory opinions of critics of the stake program, the unrealistic demands upon the members, and the authoritarianism were wrong and by no means contributed to the spiritual experience that we had. But what did cause the outpouring of the spirit that we felt back then? And all of the spiritual gifts and the spiritual growth. Well, aside from our being young and being involved in a regular growth spurt and being mostly single and being free and of the burdens of family life and work and all those things, there were some things that perhaps could be instructive to us even in a regular ward. First of all, in the 10th stake, home teaching only lasted for the duration of the school year. It was a task with an end. It did not go on forever, like the priesthood after the order of Melchizedek. At the end of the year, students who liked the program could stay in the stake, and those who did not but had not authority to change things could exit by moving to a different stake. This meant that those who stayed were more likely to be enthusiastic about the program. But my point is here that in the 10th stake, home teaching was a task with a definite terminus. In the church at large, home teaching is an endless task, carried out in most places without variation. My feeling is that one of the reasons why we have a problem doing home teaching is because it is a task that never ends. My recommendation is that home teaching be treated the way we do full-time missions, call people to it for a specific time with a specific purpose, and release them after a while. Now, an example is, let's suppose, and this goes along with what I think Eduardo and others have said, if you have a lot of active people, you don't need to home teach them. You can just have the bishop call them up and, how are you doing? But the people that need help might be identified by the leadership and say, look, they have a problem with a teenager, they have a doctrinal problem, they have a welfare problem, and then try to find people in the ward who can have the spiritual sensitivity and the resources to be able to help that particular person through a particular transitionary period or particular problem. And once that problem is resolved, or when you reach the point where you realize it's not going to work, you can release them and maybe try something else. But an indefinite mission is a very hard one to be enthusiastic about all the time. Two, the problem with home teaching is its purpose is not clear, as has been mentioned by my friends. Is it to care for the saints? And if it is, how come we don't know what the saints need and get somebody who can really help them? Why is it done by this kind of random approach of assigning people just because they're warm bodies to fill the statistical responsibilities? Or is it to kind of keep the saints in line? Then you have the need to visit everybody. You see, if the purpose of home teaching is to keep people in line, then everybody needs to be kept in line. Everybody needs a visit. But if your purpose is to help them, then you only have to send home teachers to the people who need help. You see, but it's confused because it's trying to be both. Or is it an assignment which priesthood holders must complete in order to magnify their priesthood? After all, there doesn't seem to be enough. One of the big problems of the church is keeping everybody busy. But not just busy. You can't just go out there and say, evangelize. Betsy, for heaven's sake, you have this gift to speak. Speak. Don Lu, all of you go out and do the good that comes into your mind. Well, it's, oh no. We've got to, wait a minute, we've got to keep control of the ship. So, this is a good way to do it. I mean, we can assign them particular things to do within the control. Well, it becomes a demonstration of loyalty then to carry out the program. But it's hard to keep proving your loyalty month after month, week after week. It's tiresome. So, because it's got these divergent purposes, it doesn't seem to work, or it works in a spotty way, depending on whether the home teachers have one purpose or another in mind and are clear about it. Its failure, I think, though, I must say now, Mark, kind of near the end of my remarks, its failure I don't think has anything to do with neo-orthodoxy. The failure of home teaching is that it is part of a regimen of works, not a regimen of grace. We believe in the church that we're saved by our good works. A lot of us do. I don't think it's really a true doctrine, and I don't think everybody believes it, but it's a heavy... Good works is a big emphasis in the church. I mean, we all know how much work we feel like we're required to do for the church and in the church voluntarily. We believe we're saved, in a sense, or at least exalted by our good works. But in the church, there seems to be no end of these good works. They consume our time, our energy, and yet there is always more to do. Or the same things like home teaching must be done again and again, and there doesn't seem sometimes to be very much success or reward for them spiritually. This saps our strength. We feel like Tantalus, forever pushing the boulder up the hill, but never quite getting it to the top, and then down it rolls again. The reason home teaching is not done is not because the people believe they're saved by grace and don't need to do it. It's because we believe that we're saved by works, and we are all too exhausted to do the works. The problem of home teaching is that it stems from a lack of grace and the imposition of a regimen of works of which we are both sick and tired. Finally, or at least that's my theory. Mark will say that we're all just in a state of rapture like John of the Cross and nobody's doing anything. Now I've finally come to this last point. I realize that the principal reason why home teaching fails is for the reason why most church programs, in spite of the manpower and womanpower and the hours of meetings and all of the things that are put into them, seem not to generate the kinds of results that should be warranted by the tremendous goodwill and effort that's put into them, is because the whole church suffers. It's spotty, because in some stakes it's not true and in some wards it's not true, but the whole church suffers from an epidemic of pseudo-community. That is where we come together, we don't want to deal with each other's real problems, we don't want to, you know, I got criticized just a little while ago for expressing my genuine anger. No one wants to accept that voice that's in me. They prefer the humor. But when that voice speaks out, people close up. We don't want to hear that anger, we don't want to hear that in our neighbors, we don't want to hear it in our fellow saints, we don't want to hear it in our core members. We don't want to go through the chaos of listening to each other's divergent opinions and then emptying ourselves of our own prejudices so that we can finally come to really hear each other. See, if we were able to do that, if we were to pass out of pseudo-community, which is just being nice and calling each other elder and sister and brother and sister and treating each other with courtesy, which is a kind of veneer, if we could peel back that patina and get underneath and see the divergency and the differences and all of the good and all of the bad, the bruised and the whole together, we could, with a kind of rapturous joy, make of all of that such a wine that would stun the gods. It would be like ambrosia. But we can't get to the fruit because we're afraid. We're afraid. We're afraid to do what Barry Ulanoff told us to do, which is to smell the stink of our humanity and come to realize that it is the sign of our life on earth. So holding our nose, refusing to go and do what has to be done, we indulge in a kind of pseudo-community maintenance program, which is home teaching or visiting teaching or whatever we do. Because what we're trying to do is maintain the fallacy or the illusion that we are a united people when we are not united. Because we haven't bothered to become united by listening to each other and by opening our hearts to each other and by being vulnerable. So although I think the home teaching program should and ought to work, I do not believe that it can work in the way that we want it to work, ideally as the scriptures want, you know, the scriptural, and even as the prophets today have wanted it to work, because it is like trying to serve gourmet food in a very bad restaurant where you don't have the equipment to do it and you don't have the seating capacity. It's a pseudo community. People are noisy. It isn't going to work. If we want Babette's Feast, we have to become a kind of community, and somebody has got to engineer that. Maybe not one person, maybe all of us together. And so I think my final criticism is that the lack of the failure of the home teaching program is a symptom of the failure of Zion in our midst. The failure of us to be open and pure in heart and accepting of all of the diversity and heterogeneity that is in the church. And when we are able to get past those things, and maybe home teaching can help us in some ways, but when we get past those things, then all of these other things will fall into line. If you know, it's like being in a room that's dark and trying to rearrange the furniture. And I do believe that the furniture needs to be rearranged. But before we can do it, somebody must go into the corner of the room and flick on the light.
Thank you very much. Before we open up to any questions or comments, let me make a response to Paul's remarks about why as a home teacher we're not interested in hearing problems. I'm torn between two loyalties as a home teacher. When I was single, and you had the same experience, when I was single, it was very easy to be a good home teacher because I had the time. But now that I have a family, it takes up all of my time. And my job takes up all of my time. And so the little chunk of time that I carve out to fulfill my calling, I don't have time to take away from my family to hear the problems of the families that I home teach. And I'm torn between those two loyalties. So the only thing I can do is report the problem to my superiors and think that my job is done, even though I know it's not, you know. And so this is just one response I'd like to make. Now, any other comments? Go ahead. Come on up and talk into the microphone, please.
I heard rumors about an experimental program in some of the stakes of the church that didn't involve monthly home teaching. Are any of you aware of that? And if so, are you aware of the results?
Well, let me speak for what we're doing in Arizona, where the church is still true. What we're doing is that this is a program, and I understood this was church-wide, but evidently it's not. Those that are deemed to be active, and how they figure that out, I don't know, need to be visited once every quarter. Those that are deemed to be inactive need to be visited once every month. Now, the success of that program, I don't know. Rumor has it in California that a telephone call will suffice, but you know those California saints, so I wouldn't trust that. That's what we're doing, in at least in our state, that down in Tucson. Exactly. I don't know if it's had that effect, but I worried about that. How old was it about a month or two before we left? Did they just institute that in our state?
Yeah, they were just incorporating that. You know, there's some problems that they're trying to iron out. You know, nobody knows quite what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Next, go ahead, please.
I think I agree that there could be no enthusiasm for a calling that has no end unless you're teaching BYU co-eds. In my stake in San Francisco, most of our we have 17 languages in our ward, and each home teacher has 15 families. In our stake, 50% of the households are single, and we have a real shortage of home teachers, which is nothing new. But it becomes a kind of drudgery that I detected when I was inactive in the church for 10 years until a sensitive home teacher came and was interested in me instead of statistics and didn't show a prurient interest in the in my singlehood. And he made some positive recommendations for me to return to activity and became a real friend, he and his wife. But I think that if we could just convert the entire church to the responsibility of households to home teaching, that they have, they share a responsibility too, as one of you alluded to call us if they can't make it, or to make sure that they are home taught if they want to. But it's very discouraging. Nearly all of us have felt to juggle all of the obstacles to home teaching in San Francisco. We also can't park anywhere, so we have to take the bus or find a third man to double park while we home teach. And so there are additional problems. And then to add on top of that, a group of mostly Utah saints who have fled to San Francisco to hide and are not anxious to see us, then that's almost too much of a burden, and we're not enthusiastic about it. But if households could take some responsibility in this, and if we could use the network that already exists in most wards to allow people to visit those that want them and that they're comfortable with, I would love to have the opportunity of choosing my home teacher and of choosing the people that I home teach. I think I'd be much more effective, and I appreciate your comment that you won't take an assignment unless you're able to do that. I just think that there are a lot more that we can do that we're not, and I'm sure that they're waiting breathlessly at 47 East South Temple for the answer to the question posed by this seminar.
I think that there's a certain amount of value in learning how to get along with people who are not exactly like we are. You know, in being forced to work, say for example, with a missionary companion, we get solipsistic and self-centered and egoistic in the choices of our own friends. And the church, forces us outside of ourselves by assigning us, you know, companions and families. In my own experience, I said, you know, request a new home teacher if you need one. But before we got our present home teacher, we had another home teacher who was a country hick. And he was the least likely person in the ward that my wife and I could think of who would be compatible with us as a home teacher. He didn't understand most of the words that we used in common everyday discourse, and he had an extremely limited number of topics that he could talk about with any facility. But at the same time, he was a humble person who didn't try to engage us on our ground, since he obviously couldn't do that. But he did have enough sensitivity to look carefully at the problems that we had. He came back to us every week and said, "How are you doing on getting your temple recommended?" It was something that we needed to work on. And he left the ward, you know, within about a year's time, but when he left, we had that recommend. And so I think that, having someone exactly like us is not always a requirement in a home teacher.
I'd like the panel to respond to an issue that I faced many times, having been an elder's quorum president three times and a counselor on a couple of occasions, and that is, the end of the month rolls around, the pressure is on the leadership of the quorum to gain a certain number of visits or a certain percentage of families visited, and you find out that your home teachers are out of town or that they've let slip their responsibilities, and you're faced with the dilemma of, should you go out and make your home teacher's visits? I eventually came to the conclusion that no, I shouldn't. It's a two-sided issue. One, the family doesn't get visited where they may need a visit. Or on the other side, if you do somebody else's job for them, then it becomes very convenient for them to let you do it in the future. I'd like the panel to respond to that.
Well, I look at this by way of analogy. If my wife is an extremely, and you can tell by my size, a good cook, and that's not it. She cooks very well, and I just overeat. But my children, if they were to come to the table and not eat, I mean, and this happened for more than one or two meals, and it wasn't connected to some exciting event in the family, and I could see, I would begin to worry that they were ill. And so what I think is that our desire to have 100% statistics is a state of, it's a mental health illness. Because what we are not looking at is the bad statistics and saying, what are these bad statistics telling us about the health of the church? If, for example, a ward has only 50 or 30 or 40% unprodded home teaching, my question would be, if I were a spiritual counselor in the church or leader, would be, what is it about this ward or this stake or this region that makes the people not want to be together and eat together and love one another and visit one another and care about one another? Because although I do believe that we are not naturally born with these desires, that they are readily accessible to us through the Holy Spirit. And if this is the true church, which I believe it is, why is it that the Spirit manifest in my members, in my fellow members, is not moving them to want to dance and sing and do the things that they should want to do? What is the problem? Is it like Eduardo says, a lack of time? Are the men working too hard? Are they spending too much time at work? Is it because they want too much money? Because they believe they can acquire with money only those things, the peace, happiness, and security that can only come through Jesus Christ? It is important for us to understand that whenever the church fails, the answer is not to try to use compulsion to promote some kind of, obtain some kind of statistical advantage. It is for us to sit down, as we should do with our anger, our despair, our humiliation, our failure, and ask God in contemplation and meditation the meaning of it. And then to empty ourselves of our predetermined attitudes and prepossessions and let God answer us and then do what He says. The church can only be run by Jesus Christ. It cannot be run by us. We cannot feed the sheep. Even though I know He said to the apostles, feed my sheep. It is He who made the fish. That's why the little fish thing was in the story about how they have the fish on the beach. You know, He puts the fish and He invites them over out of the sea and they can't believe it's Him and He gives them this fish and of course it's not in the original manuscript. Darn it. I don't care if it's in the imaginal, because it should have happened if it didn't, and it would have happened if it could have. And so we're called to feed the sheep. But on the other hand, we have to remember that the source of that food is those baskets that Jesus blesses and the loaves that He breaks. And we have to go to Him to get it. And so any statistical or corporate attempt to bring about the health of the church must fail. Unless that's coming directly out of those baskets, directly out of the hand of God. And so we must contemplate the things that go wrong. And that will begin to bring about a change more than just simply being concerned month to month about whether we have met certain statistics, and then after we have met them, we fall back into a state of complacency.
From everything that you've said, it occurs to me that it might be useful if we start to think of the act of home teaching as something like, I'm not saying as, but something like an ordinance, that it's a marker, that we know that when we're baptized, that the salvation is only partly in the marker, and that the implications of baptism are unending. And so it might be useful for us to have a minimum standard where we would know when the marker was satisfied, and then both of these things were always going on. Just an idea.
My name's Nolan Frederick. I am an engineer. I live in Boulder, Colorado. I've been an elders quorum president. I've been a ward clerk, and I'm now the high priest group leader. Amongst the men in my group, those who get essentially 100% home teaching done are the men who understand the program the least. Generally, I've found that men don't do their home teaching because they're terrified of it. Home teaching is a frightening responsibility. And shotgun teaching, such as we often hear, we hear it from the pulpit, reinforces the terror of home teaching. I might add that the best advice that I ever got as a home teacher, I got from one of the most terrifying families in our ward. I had a man in my ward who maintains the posture of being a terrifying individual. He's Jewish. He's from Brooklyn. Now, for those of you who know Brooklyn Jews, that ought to be enough. But he has a retarded son. He had become very bitter against God and because of this son's being retarded, and struggled constantly with trying to maintain his membership in the church, his self-respect, and his family together. And I was assigned to be his home teacher. He was a man who incidentally had told the stake president after having contradicted the stake president in one of his policy proposals, and was told that he shouldn't talk to the stake president that way, simply referred to the stake presidency by saying, "My ancestors argued with God. You're pretty small potatoes compared to him." Now, when I went to his home to be a home teacher, I was frightened. I was nervous about this. And he said to me, I asked him, I says, "Phil, what do you want me to do as a home teacher?" Now, I have never learned how to do home teaching. I've been home teaching with people who are very skillful, but I didn't know how to do that. He said, "Just be a friend of the family. Just be a friend of the family." Well, I said, you know, maybe I can do that, because I can't bring a spiritually uplifting and reinforcing thrilling message every month. So I brought a microscope for his retarded son to look at a black widow spider with. Next month I came back, his son had a bottle of black widow spiders. Because I'm an engineer, his son wanted to enter the soapbox derby. Well, I had no sons. I had never done this kind of thing. But his dad, knowing I was an engineer, asked me if I'd help his son with the soapbox derby thing. His dad's a psychologist, doesn't know anything but wheels that wheels turn. So I got serious, and I designed this boy a racer. And I built it. I also do manufacturing work. And I built him a racer. He painted it. And we flat wiped the competition in that soapbox derby. I didn't know it, but I was being a good home teacher. They never forgot that. It was so incidental in the things that I did that I didn't realize I was being a good home teacher. Every month I would go there, and I was uncomfortable because I didn't know how to talk to the family. The kids were very rowdy in the family. I couldn't talk to those kids. But it's those little things that I did that they remembered. They didn't remember how incompetent I was. Well, my home teachers in my quorum are incompetent. Only out of 33 men, only 3 don't have at least 1 degree. Most all of them have PhD degrees, and they're incompetent, and home teaching is frightening for them. So if you want home teaching to be done, don't make it such a terror. Try to make friends with your home teachers. Encourage your home teachers not to try to do too much. Let's not make it such a terrible experience. I promised, for those of you who might be quorum presidents and so forth, I make my quorums one solemn promise. I will never, ever talk in quorum meeting and I will never exhort them to do their home teaching. Home teaching is an individual matter. It's a Christian duty. And try not to tie this business of this constipating business of salvation through works into home teaching. It'll bind you up and ruin your programs, and it'll ruin people, and it'll frighten them. This business of salvation through works is a hard thing to manage. But home teaching can be rewarding. Home teaching can be terrible. I just had a woman who I was home teacher to for 10 years ask to have her name taken off the rolls of the church. It can hurt.
Since I don't believe you can legislate a Christian concern, I would like to have either Mark or Paul or both of you address the issue of what would happen if somehow, looking at the idea of a husband and wife team instead of a man and a boy team, and even maybe taking it one step further of family assignments as far as...
It's interesting you ask that question, because scant 3 months ago, in my own anguish over my home teaching, I went to my bishop and said, would it not be a good idea if my wife and I went out together? He calmly advised me that wives could not do that for the reason they did not hold the priesthood, to which I responded, well, then how is it that they do it for other women but not men? And the conversation broke down at that point. I would personally welcome it. I think my wife has spiritual gifts that I will never possess, and I think she would add much to the effort. But unfortunately, the system does not permit that at this time, though it certainly should on moral and other grounds. I think that may yield or add to the effort that which cannot be possible when men only administer to men. And I know we can get back into issues that Paul and his wife feel very strongly about, and I share with them. But I don't know that will ever change until such time as men are willing to give up the power and that responsibility. But I think, as the suggestion went along, I think it'd be a very fine thing to do. And I think if in doing that, we could dispense priesthood responsibilities to all morally qualified persons, and not just those of proper physical configuration, I think that it would be an awful lot better for the church. And I share that view with you. But I've tried and it doesn't work.
In my ward.
It's easier, of course, to get forgiveness than permission in most cases. But I would like to say just very briefly this on the matter of the women serving. If the home teaching program is seen in terms of keeping the saints in line, it's better if the men do it. But if the purpose of the home teaching program is actually to administer spiritual gifts and power and blessing to the members of the church, then I think that it is essential that women participate in the program, because they have spiritual gifts and powers which the men in some cases don't have, and in a few cases can never have, and can reach into problems and have perceptions and insights which we can never have. And so if we're going to see, not with one eye, but with two, in the perfect perspective that God requires us to see, then we need to have both eyes functioning. That is, the male and the female together. And I think this is not only true for home teachers. I think it's true for the presidency of the church.
Even though I'm not a panelist, I feel free to respond to this because I'm a woman. And I've gone home teaching with my husband and have felt very comfortable about it, and I think it's the thing to do sometimes. And, you know, being a lawyer, you ask permission of your bishop. Don't ever do that again. Just do it. But I have other feelings, too. Number one, and this is just a gut reaction, when my boys go out with my husband, something happens that can never happen any other time. When their model is a nurturing man, and they go out with him without me, something happens that can never happen any other time. And also, if I'm not with my husband physically present when I go home teaching, when he goes home teaching, I am always present with him when he goes home teaching. I am always there. Ask him, he'll tell you.
My wife and I did home teaching this way for about 2 years in northern Indiana, where our ward extended from West Lafayette up to Chicago. And we had a home teaching route that was about 100 miles long in a circuit. And so we had a combined home teaching and Relief Society visit. The only problem with that, however, was that the Relief Society visit was lost. And I think that there is great value in having those two sisters visit the women.
My understanding that such a team of husband and wife is now officially sanctioned by the church. There was a video we saw in a stake meeting within the last 6 months that indicated that under special circumstances, the bishop and the quorum leader can officially call a husband and wife team to home teach.
I am a home teacher, an officially called home teacher. Elder Haight lives in my ward. He knows I'm a home teacher. And guess what? We still don't always do it. And I bring to that sort of a dual perspective of, as a visiting teacher, when I had a companion who called me every month and said, here is my schedule, when can you come? We always went visiting teaching. We knew our sisters, we had easy sisters to visit, and we always went and everything was fine. And I thought, well, now maybe if you have husbands and wives going together, certainly they can coordinate schedules and maybe home teaching will get done. But as has been mentioned, life gets in the way, and it's not any easier to go as a couple when you have family responsibilities and children and jobs and this and that and the other. And I don't think it's because we don't care about the people that we go to or aren't interested in them. What has worked for us is that each family gets a turn. I'm not super mom. I'm sorry. I can't get everything all done. But I can say this month, I can make time to go to this family or to this group or whatever. And so once a month, one family gets a turn. Now, statistically, that doesn't look so great because we have more than one family, and so the other three don't get a turn. But when they do get a turn, it's a turn that we truly go and pay attention. We're not, I can only be here for 10 minutes because I got five more families to see. It's we go to that family, we pay attention to that family, whatever they want to talk about or do, and we don't care that we didn't do 100% of them because the ones that we went to, we listened to.
As I was listening to the responses and, of course, listening to the main topic, I thought about last year's seminar, and I just got the tape of Sister Castleton and the Mormon Molly talk last year. When the question was asked, well, what about women taking over the role of men? And she said something to the effect that that wasn't what she was interested in. She just wanted to be able to expand her role of a woman, which would include leadership and decision-making and the like. She did not want to take the place of men. I think this is what our home teaching is letting us do. Certainly in Lake Oswego, Oregon, we have husband and wives that are home teaching. We have we have men going out by themselves home teaching. We have home teachers assigned sometimes to one family, sometimes to four or five families. We try to tailor the home teaching and the family to the needs of the family and the needs of the home teacher that has been working. We don't, we have the the general authorities and the leaders saying the home teaching needs to be begun by the 31st of the month. The report does not get turned in until the 10th of the month. If a home teacher does not do his home teaching until the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, first, second, or third of the month, and it gets reported before the 10th of the month, it's been reported as the month before. Now, I know the Relief Society doesn't do it that way, and we do have some conflict there because they're doing it more of the letter of the law, but we're doing it in the spirit of the law of the home teaching being done. We're also under that mandate that the brother said regarding Arizona, that we could visit our families quarterly if they're active. Our state president has said no, all families should be visited monthly. The reason for this is to allow the home teacher to home teach a family that has a positive mental attitude regarding the gospel. That is, that they can have a friendly, happy experience as a home teacher. They're not just going to the welfare and those that are spiritually ill, and that can be somewhat frustrating. So I would like to hear some comments about the fact that we have, at least in our state and ward, some leadership that is being rather flexible.